Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That war rocket Ajax to bring back his body.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast. We're your hosts. My name's Chris Sims, the birthday boy. And with me as always is Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you tonight, buddy?
I'm doing very well, Chris, and I hope you're having a lovely birthday week.
I am. Matt, would you ask me how old I am?
I feel like that's rude.
I am specifically requesting it.
Okay, Chris, how old are you?
36. Caliber.
Oh.
Punisher 2099. Great. Yeah. Good stuff, good stuff. We've got a great show for you, everybody, this week. Matt, what do we do on this show?
Well, when we're not talking about getting airblown in our face by huge foxes, we talk to people in the world of comic books and books about the world of comic books. And we're talking to somebody this week who fits in both of those categories. Fred Van Lente, the author of the currently available book, The Con Artist, the writer of many, many comics that you have probably read at least some of. If you're a fan of comics, you must have come across Fred's work at some point. We're going to talk to him about The Con Artist, about all the stuff that's in there, about San Diego Comic-Con and how close to home it hits, how the world of comics is depicted in that book. It is very accurate, I will tell you right now.
Before we get into that, Matt, why don't we take care of some business?
We should do that, Chris. And we're going to start by thanking our newest supporters on Patreon.
Listen, I know you want to give us money, and it's cool. We want you to give us money. But you no longer have to go get a certified check or money order and send that over to 415 Gimmick Street. You can just go to patreon.com/warrocketajax, where you can kick in as little as $1 a month, a recurring donation, to help back the show, to help keep us going, to help me and Matt pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills.
That's right, Chris. And I don't think we actually have any brand new pledges this past week. We do have some from the week before, such as Callum Smith.
Oh, thank you, Callum.
Carlos Yu.
Thank you, Carlos.
Colby Newton.
Thank you, Colby.
And Chris Hurtling.
That's my name.
That is your name. We didn't get to those names last week because we were doing the show from Wizard World Winston-Salem. Because
we were a couple grumpy gusses.
That's right. So if you want to hear more of us being grumpos and facilitate that, facilitate our weird free soda habit, which you can hear about on Snack Situation, you could do that by heading over to patreon.com/warrocketajax. And as Chris said, kicking in as little as $1 a month to keep this show going as it has been. Keep Every Story Ever specials going 2 hours every month. Keep Movie Fighters in business. Keep us doing Snack Situation. And also you get some cool stuff in the process, like bonus audio, line stepping privileges for our list segments, and ad-free episodes of the show. All right, Chris, with that, it's time for some checks and wrecks.
Yeah, it is.
Chris, what do you have to check in with this week?
It's my birthday.
Birthday! Bah, 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 bah,
bah. I am 36 years old. I am going to celebrate my birthday on Saturday by getting up in the morning and going to see Teen Titans Go to the Movies.
Which
I'm very
great.
Excited about.
That sounds like a great time.
Yeah, it is actually not my birthday yet. We did my birthday present last week, and now I'm talking about my birthday again, and it's not actually my birthday yet, which I'm only now realizing makes me sound like a real asshole.
Look, we only get to interact with our listeners once a week, even though many weeks we do it more than once, but I'm going to stick to this premise.
Uh-huh.
So bringing it up more than once, I think, is perfectly fine. I don't think you're in any trouble.
Well, I did want to say I did get some birthday presents, which is awesome. You, of course, got me the NES Classic, which I'm very excited about diving into as soon as I get through this mountain of work. But also, I lost the note, so I apologize, but someone got me the hardcover of Curse of Strahd, which I've been wanting because I'm actually running that adventure, but I've been using the Roll20 version, so having that book is very, very fun for me now. So thank you for that. I also got a gift from Chris and Christy, the hosts of Chris's on Infinite Earths, a podcast that I was a guest on because it's all my name. They cover crossover events and talk about them. So I was on their first Phalanx Covenant episode, and they bought me a book of apocryphal books of the New Testament to help out with Apocrypals. So thank you to everyone who got me a present. That's always very nice. It's really fantastic that people like me that much enough to do that. And thank you for if you just said happy birthday or had a nice thought about me on August 12th. I do appreciate that. Matt, what's your check this week?
My check is a fundraising campaign that I am not necessarily at the forefront of, but a major supporter of, and certainly tangentially related to. My wonderfully talented wife, Marlene Thompson, is going to be hosting a brand new web series that is a mix of national and local political comedy and commentary. If you are familiar with the type of show where someone sits at a desk and makes jokes about the news, you know these shows. The Daily Show, John Oliver, Samantha Bee, those kinds of shows. It's got a little bit more of a local bent, though, for Asheville, North Carolina, where we live. There's going to be a live show in mid-September that we do here, but there's also going to be that's going to be recorded, shot professionally, and those videos are going to be put on YouTube and Funny or Die as a web series called From the Ashes, because it's Asheville. See, you get it?
And, oh, I thought you were going to be talking about Rick Flagg coming back to join the Suicide Squad again.
It's all Phoenix jokes, just nothing but Phoenix jokes. Anyway, so that's the name of the show. Marlene's hosting it. I'm doing some writing on the show along with sort of what you would call a writing staff. And we're doing some filmed segments, like some segments on the street with like interviews with people. There's a sketch from the show that's being shot this coming weekend. So by the time this episode goes up, it will have been shot last weekend. And we're raising money for it on an Indiegogo so we can pay the crew. We can pay camera operators, people who are doing lighting, people who are doing sound for the show. So their hard work to make the show look good and make it professional when it goes up on the web, we're doing that. So there will be a link to the Indiegogo in the show notes for this episode in my check area. But you can also just search for From the Ashes Indiegogo or look at my Twitter because I've been tweeting about it a lot. Whatever the case, if you would like to chip in for that, you can go to that Indiegogo and kick in a little bit of money to help it happen. If you do contribute, you can get cool stuff in related to the show. We're going to make a video of just Marlene thanking the Indiegogo supporters. We're naming characters in various sketches after Indiegogo backers, and there's even a tier where, like, the picture that's going to be put up next to Marlene during one of her jokes will be your picture, where you're using it as an example of whatever she's talking about during that segment. So that should be fun. The show's going to be a fun time. And if you want to help us make it happen and pay the crew for their hard work, you can go kick into that. I'm very excited about this show happening. Marlene's been putting in a ton of work to make it happen.
Yeah, and I do not say this lightly, but we've said it on the show before, and Matt, you have agreed. Marlene's the funniest person any of us know.
Yeah, it's not even a contest, really.
Yeah, she's great, and that is absolutely something that deserves your attention.
All right, Chris, it is now time for us to make some recommendations. What do you have to recommend?
Nothing. I just remember we do Checks and Rex. I have not done anything. Ever since we got back from Wizard World, I've just been working to catch up, and because I'm going to, you know, be doing some birthday stuff this weekend. So instead, I want to use this time to just quick give an update to last week's show, because we did not actually talk about this. The last thing that happened to us at Wizard World Winston-Salem, you and I went across the street from the convention center and got hamburgers.
Yes.
And we basically just sat there for an hour talking about how Creed rules.
The movie Creed.
The movie Creed. Starring Adonis Creed. Michael B. Jordan is Adonis Creed.
Well,
and
I mean,
Creed
look,
2 is going to, like, super rule.
With Arms Wide Open is perhaps an underrated album, but we didn't talk about how the band Creed rules. We talked about how the movie Creed rules.
Yeah, I mean, I would have absolutely gone with My Sacrifice because there was that very emotional WWF video package. But no, we were talking about Creed, the film, the Rocky spinoff film, which is very good. And then we kind of like wrapped up, we paid the check, we were getting ready to say our goodbyes, and literally the Sound of Silence started playing.
There was a whole Simon and Garfunkel album playing.
But
the entire time we were in that restaurant. And we just happened to be leaving during the playing of The Sound of Silence.
It was a beautiful moment that I could not have written better. Or if I had written it, I would send back for revision on that one.
It was very on the nose.
All right, so Matt, what's your recommendation this week? My recommendation, by the way, is not Simon and Garfunkel. I'm not a fan.
It's the movie Creed.
Yeah, dude, that shit rules.
My recommendation is a movie also. It is the movie Sorry to Bother You, which is out in theaters now, which I feel like if I tell you anything about it, I'll be giving something away. Because that is a movie that escalates in a very alarming way. Like, you think it's one thing, and then it's something else, brother.
Now, I have heard people say this about this movie. Is it a scary movie?
I wouldn't say it's scary. I would say it has some horror and or sci-fi elements.
Okay.
There's a thing that the movie drops on you about halfway or a little past halfway in that you either accept or you don't. And okay, if you accept it, you're in. If you don't accept it, I don't know. I don't know what happens, but you kind of just, it's a movie you just kind of have to go with. But I did accept it, and I ended up really loving it, like really loving how like buck wild this movie gets in terms of like the story it decides to tell. Because it just starts out being a movie about a guy and his girlfriend and his friends. They all get telemarketing jobs, and so that's where the Sorry to Bother You comes from.
Got it.
Like, they get telemarketing jobs. The movie does this really interesting bit of business about how when he calls somebody, he suddenly appears in their home at the desk where he's sitting. It's like a visual representation of a telemarketing call.
Okay.
And he is told by a coworker who's played by Danny Glover that if he really wants to sell stuff, he's got to use his white voice. And so the lead actor in Sorry to Bother You, who you might know from Atlanta, he was also in Get Out. His name's Lakeith Stanfield. He starts using his white voice, and David Cross just starts coming out of his mouth.
Okay.
Like, when he calls people and uses his white voice, he just talks like he is dubbed by David Cross. So it's not like a put on white voice. He just has a white man's voice. And that is the least of the out there things that happens in that movie.
Is this movie going to give me anxiety?
It has some anxious moments in it, I will say.
Okay.
I very much think it's worth seeing, though.
Okay. All right. I will have to take your word on that.
Like, that, there was, I saw it in a pretty full movie theater, and there was just this sense when it really, like, ramped up, when it really escalated, like, kind of everybody in the movie theater was, like, looking at each other to make sure we all just saw the same thing.
Okay.
And I don't want to give away any more than that, but I really dug it, and I think if you're listening and that sounds cool to you, you should go see it. All right, Chris, we've done our checks and recs, so let's talk about some comics. Superman number 2 is a weird one, Chris.
Buddy, let me tell you, this is the one where, for me, it all came crashing down.
I'll say this. I still have high hopes for Action Comics, because that seems to be the more grounded book, right? That's the book that is dealing with the arson story.
Mm-hmm. See, this I've one, very quickly fallen behind on that, because I just read Superman and Superman number 2. I haven't even been following Action Comics. You should I read accidentally Action read Comics. The one that's about Rogel Czar.
You should read Action Comics number 1001.
Okay.
Because it continues the arson story, which I think is the most compelling thing in the Bendis run. This book is all about Rogel Czar.
Boof. Boof. We've made our opinions on Rogel Czar clear.
Yeah.
Matt, I have a hard line in the sand that I have drawn. And that's that if I read a comic book and Batman talks about taking a shit, it's a bad comic.
Okay, that part is wild.
Yeah, it's out of nowhere.
Well, okay. So Earth is in the Phantom Zone.
Yeah.
And thus, it's not orbiting the sun anymore.
Uh-huh.
Which means everything on Earth is getting fucked up.
Yeah, I'm down with that. Even when Aquaman's like, "Hey, the seas are boiling," I'm like, "Well, that would instantly kill all life on Earth if that was happening." But okay, yes, I'm down with that.
But what's I didn't even notice Aquaman saying the seas are boiling because Batman is saying like, "I gotta pull the Batmobile over and take a shit."
It's sometimes you write dialogue to get a feeling across.
Yeah.
And then you go back in on the lettering pass and you finish it. Like, we've done that a bunch of times on comics. You know, we kind of put something, you know, something we're happy with if it goes to print, but like, I know other scripts that I've seen, some people will just put like, this is what this character is trying to convey, you know, mood dialogue. I feel like Batman saying, "I gotta pull over the Batmobile and take a shit right now," is something that maybe should have gotten taken care of in the lettering pass. Matt, am I wrong on this? That I think that is a deal breaker.
That was jarring.
Yeah. It's bananas that that happens in a comic book with the word Superman on the cover.
I think this issue was really odd in a lot of different ways.
It was, that's the thing. It feels very tonally different from what we got in 6 issues of Man of Steel.
Well, the pacing is way out there.
The pacing is bananas.
Because this is a book that's full of 2-page splashes and single page splash pages.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a good amount of like narration and dialogue, but very little actually happens in this single issue of comics.
Yeah, like, honestly, nothing happens in it.
Like, Superman talks to the Flash a lot.
Superman talks to the Flash. The Flash is kind of a goofball, but
he feels a lot more like Wally than Barry.
He feels a lot more like Wally, and also is, I don't know if this is an Ivan Rice thing or an Alex Sinclair thing, but there's a part where he takes off his mask, and it's, He's got bright red Wally West hair.
Yeah.
But I just, Matt, I am more comfortable with Rorschach getting a Green Lantern ring than I am with Batman talking about taking a shit.
I think it's interesting that this is doing the Justice League thing where they have the like psychic connection to each other, mm-hmm. and they can all talk to each other wherever they are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that seems like an interesting, like, shared universe thing that this book is doing. But this whole issue just made me wonder where Superman as a title is going.
Yeah, man. For sure. For sure. Like,
I thought I had a beat on it, and now I do not.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just very strange. Because, again, nothing happens in this issue. We get a flashback to Tamaran having a war against Thanagar however long ago, and then the Tamaranians are like, we're not going to retreat for anything. Oh shit, they brought Rogozar. We got to go. The dialogue in that scene was not like great, but I like the gag of it. You know, I get it. Then we get some stuff from like Rogozar's point of view based on hit, like that goes back to him falling through the Phantom Zone. Then we get Superman talking to the Flash. That's it. Yeah, and then Rogozar like looks at Superman, and Superman looks at Rogozar, and Superman talks about word choice.
The chief question of how Earth ended up in the Phantom Zone, not answered.
The chief question of whether Batman manages to pull over his rocket car and hit the bathroom is not answered in this issue. It is beyond the scope of this comic.
Real question, Chris.
Yeah.
Don't you think Batman would have something built into his suit to deal with that?
No! Because it should never come up!
Okay.
This is not the universe in which Batman taking a shit has to exist!
Wouldn't Batman have planned ahead of time for one of his enemies to, like, hit him with some kind of beam or gas that made him incontinent?
How dare you bring this Warren Ellis transmetropolitan shit into my home? Matt, we are now doing the thing that I just said automatically makes something bad.
All right, I think we just should move on then.
Yeah, have at it.
I want to talk about Fantastic Four number one, which I think is a good issue of comic books, but a bad number one issue. If I can put it that way. It feels more like a story that should be in like a Free Comic Book Day book that leads up to the run, because it ends with Reed and Sue making their message known to Johnny and Ben. I like everything that happens in the book. I think Sarah Pacelli's art is great.
Fantastic.
I love her versions
of... No pun intended. It's really, really good.
I love her versions of Johnny and Ben. And they're not just like standard from the model sheet versions of those characters either.
Her Ben is really good.
It's great.
And he's hard to draw right.
And the great thing about it is she makes him her own.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't just look like somebody else's Ben Grimm. It's her Ben Grimm. But he's very recognizably the Thing. Everything the Thing does in this issue makes perfect sense. And a lot of what Johnny does makes sense, even though, pardon the pun, Johnny's a little more hot-headed than I think he should be, based on the way he's been characterized in other books for the past, you know, 60 years.
I am going to recuse myself from really covering this issue, but I did think that that particular element followed pretty well from what we've seen in Marvel 2 and 1.
I mean, there's a fight scene in Marvel 2 and 1 where Johnny does kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
But, okay, I'm going to give a little spoiler here. So if you haven't read Fantastic Four number 1, skip ahead. Because he kind of comes to the realization that things aren't going to change, and he needs to do this now. Ben asks Alicia Masters to marry him. Then he calls Johnny over to tell him about the news, about the proposal, about the engagement, and asks Johnny to be his best man. And I feel like it would ring more true for Johnny to, at least in that moment, say yes and be congratulatory, and then maybe in private with Ben, tell him, you should wait and make Reed your best man. He should be your best man. Than to basically get mad and kind of throw a little tantrum about it there. I think there's probably a storytelling economy aspect to that. But Johnny constantly regressing back to being like 18-year-old hot-headed Johnny Storm instead of an adult who knows how to do some adult things is one of the perpetual Fantastic Four problems for me. But aside from that, I feel like the characterizations in the book are very well done. The flashback part in the book that kind of flashes back to when they were the total Fantastic Four, like, you know, Reed and Sue were there. The whole thing where Johnny has to sing a song to get them back to their dimension. All that stuff is great. The art in the book is great. I feel like once we get rolling on Fantastic Four stories, this will be a good run. This just feels like waiting to get to the fireworks factory in some ways. A good issue of comics that I wish this story had been told before number one, and we could kick off number one with having a Fantastic Four story. One last book I want to talk about, Chris, is Black Badge number one, which is a new book from Boom Studios, written by Matt Kent, who also draws the cover. Tyler Jenkins does the art. Colors by Hillary Jenkins, letters by Jim Campbell. This is a wild, high-concept book that I really dig.
Yeah, you were telling me about this, because I have not read it yet, but you were telling me what it was right before we started recording, and I, like, sat up straight in my chair. I got hyped for this.
So what this book is about is a group of four scouts. They're just like kind of generic scouts. They're not Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts because there are male and female members of this group of four. But the leader of the team has gotten every badge that you can get. His name is Willie. So he's told in a secret meeting that since he has acquired every badge, it's time for him to get the last secret badge, the Black Badge. Chris, do you want to guess what the Black Badge is?
I don't even know where to begin, Matt. I'm very excited.
This team of scouts tags along with a high school group on a class trip to South Korea. They get in a boat, they get quote-unquote lost, and end up in North Korea.
Okay.
Chris, they go on a black ops mission.
Yeah, okay. Yes, I'm with it. Yes.
That's how you earn the Black Badge.
Right, it's for black ops. Got it.
Yes.
Makes perfect sense. Genius. That is some we're going to call the villain who represents the dark side of humanity dark side shit right there. That's brilliant.
Yeah. I'm not sure how well this book can sustain itself. Like, it feels like a premise that might burn itself out after a handful of story arcs. But, man, that's a great high concept.
I mean, that's some Ninjak is the 11th ninja. He's actually Ninja K. Shit. Happening. Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah. I don't have that much else to say about it. I will probably read issue 2 just to see what happens next. But, man, oh, man, what a great high concept. With that, Chris, speaking of great high concepts, how about a murder mystery set at Comic-Con International in San Diego, California?
What a high concept.
That's the premise of The Con Artist by Fred Van Lente, and we're about to talk to him.
joining us for this week's program, we are very excited to welcome back one of our faves. You will know his comics work from everywhere, from everything, from all the good stuff, from Incredible Hercules, from... what else, Fred? What else you got? G.I. Joe. We were just talking about your G.I. Joe run, late lamented.
Sure. Archer and Armstrong. Spider-Man. I did Action Presidents, Action Philosophers, Comic Book History of Comics, Big Trouble in Little China. Just shoot me at any point. Keep me from rattling off comic styles. Iron Man Legacy.
Great job, Chris. Zombies. Great job, Chris, making our guests list off their own resume at the beginning.
Matt, as previously established, I'm tired and you're sick. Fred, that's the thing. Fred has been everywhere. It's honestly hard to narrow it down. But his new book is called The Con Artist. It is a really great premise that I'm really excited to talk about. Fred Vinlenti, of course, is here. Fred, how are you tonight?
I'm well. How are you guys doing?
Well, previously established, Fred.
Sorry, as I was saying it, I realized.
I appreciate
the listeners don't want to know.
So, Fred, let's talk about the new book.
Sure.
Now, this you've done. I think the last time you were on here was also to talk about a novel.
Yes, I believe so.
So this is your. Am I correct? This is your second novel.
It is
prose novel, I should say.
Words.
But this is very much a novel that I think cuts right to the core of our demographic because it's about murdering someone at a comic book convention.
That's right. That's right. Not that I would recommend the folks at home to go out and do this. We're not recommending it at all. But sometimes you're in a con and you want to kill someone. And this is about a person who was accused of doing just that.
Well, before we get too much into the details of that, specifically the con is San Diego Comic-Con, and I want to talk about that. But I also want to, since we talked about your other book the last time you were on, 10 Dead Comedians, I have to mention the cameo.
Yes.
In The Con Artist of one of those comedians.
Yes.
And how you are clearly creating a Fred Vinlenti shared novel universe.
That's right. The Vinlentiverse is here. Listen up, Hollywood. Option rights are currently available.
I mean, look, I think they've given up on the dark universe.
That's right. They've given up. DC, you know, Warner's Call Me.
So
these DC characters anymore. So
there's a whole shared universe slot just opening up for you, Fred.
Count them two properties.
I don't know how much you want me to say about the cameo, but I do. I love the idea of that being in there, and it's simply something for people who read your other book.
Yes.
I mean, did you put a lot of thought into that, or did you just kind of like in the moment think it would be really fun to stick this character in?
Well,
the award ceremony part.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's giving too much away to say that there's a host. You know, the Eisners often have celebrity hosts and celebrity presenters, so I thought it'd be funny to have one of the celebrity presenters slash hosts of the Conners be one of the fictional comedians from 10 Dead Comedians, one of the more famous ones, and I just thought that was funny. And I don't necessarily want to say who it is since, you know, it's not entirely clear whether Con Artist takes place before or after 10 Dead Comedians, so, you know, it holds out the possibility that person in 10 Dead Comedians survives that book, which is not necessarily true, but yeah, it was a fun little Easter egg, I think, for people, and people seem to enjoy it.
So here is my question for you right off the bat, Fred. Mm-hmm. You are known, at least to us, primarily for comic books.
Right.
Then you did a novel about comedians.
Right.
So I'm sure when 10 Dead Comedians came out, there was some confusion. Because I know when I introduce myself to people and I say that I write comics, they will often ask me if I mean stand-up comics.
That's right. That's right.
So did you get that again when your second novel, you're like, oh yeah, it's about a comic convention?
Well, you know, it's funny. When I always found, like, I guess this has changed somewhat. When I was first doing comics professionally, writing, what I would always get was, oh, you put the words in the balloons. And I was like, well, no, that's a letter. And they're like, oh, so you draw. Nope. No, I don't. I don't draw. I just script write. What's interesting about this book is that the hero of the con artist is a comic book artist in San Diego who's unjustly accused of murder. And there's a bunch of illustrations in the con artist drawn by my pal and often collaborator and current Books of Magic artist Tom Fowler that are supposed to be sketches from the main character Mike's sketchbook as he goes through this crazy adventure. And so there has been a little bit of confusion about whether it's a comic or not. And so I've had to sort of explain to people. So it's sort of almost been the reverse where it's been like, no, it's a prose novel. There's 10 illustrations, but mostly it's just words.
I love the idea of someone hearing it's a prose novel with 10 illustrations being like, okay, it's 10 pages?
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. It seems thicker than that.
Fred, I got to tell you, as someone who has attended San Diego Comic-Con and experienced the madness of it, reading this book is weird. Because it's clearly written by someone who knows where the stuff is at Comic-Con, who knows about the Bayfront Hilton and knows about the Hyatt and knows about the Marriott and like knows what's around the convention center and kind of like how people are and where they situate. Like, it's right at the beginning. There's a part about, you know, the protesters, a lot of times the Westboro Baptist Church protesters who are at Comic-Con holding up the big signs.
Right.
And
it's a part of the plot.
I just like, there's a weird feeling to me, or there's a good amount of stuff in the book that's real. And there's a good amount of stuff in the book that's fictional. Like, there are fictional comics peppered in with real comics. There are real groups of people peppered in with fictional groups of people. There are fictional comic book publishers and real ones. I would love to know how you kind of came to the decision of which real stuff to include and what should be fictionalized.
That's a great question. The part of it was that we knew we wanted to have illustrations. That was part of how I sold the book in the first place. So you can mention Deadpool and Green Lantern and the Powerpuff Girls and so on and so forth as much as you want, as long as it's in prose form. You can't really draw them without running afoul of trademark laws, just separate from copyright. So all the fictional stuff, I knew I had to come up with fictional stuff simply so we could have illustrations and have Tom draw stuff. Like one thing he drew was there's a fictional CW show called Red Riding Hood Werewolf Hunter. So there's all these cosplay werewolves and various degrees of slutty Red Riding Hoods. But that's, you know, obviously something that's made up. I knew I wanted to have the hero Mike has this mentor who has sort of a Jack Kirby-esque conflict with his publisher over this famous character, Mr. Mystery, that he created that they want to make a movie out of and so forth. And there's a whole lawsuit involved in that. So obviously Mr. Mystery had to be conceived of and is fictional. But beyond that, I wanted to sort of get it as quote unquote real as possible and really make it feel like something that maybe actually plausibly could happen. There's another made up TV show in there called Cell Block Z, which is this zombie apocalypse prison drama. And that also has a major aspect in the plot. Because I knew I wanted to have like a, they often have those like weird like escape rooms and obstacle courses in Petco Park.
Yeah, there's a. I feel like I've heard of a zombie show that had a big obstacle course at Petco Park because there's a lot of money in that zombie show.
Oh,
I feel like I might have heard something about that.
Any similarities? Purely coincidental, lawyers.
It's got a famous character named Chambers on it.
He's got two bats.
That's right.
So, Fred, Matt was talking about how you know where everything is. How many times did you do San Diego, Matt?
Just once. I've only been one time.
And yet the landscape is burned into your memory.
I believe it.
Yeah, because it becomes, when you work it the way we did, which we covered it for Comics Alliance, so we were always having to be somewhere at a certain time.
Right.
And it's 4.5 days, but it's all happening on a very tight schedule because there's so much to see. So you get this mental map of knowing, okay, I can go behind the convention center at this time if I walk along the marina. It's a little longer, but I can get to the Bayfront faster because there's a back door at the Bayfront that'll take you right into where the ballroom is. How many times did you do San Diego, and did it get to the point where no research was necessary? You're just like, yeah, you know what it looks like. You know what the convention center looks like.
You know, I don't do it that often. Like, I actually went last year to research the book, and then I went this year to promote the book. And that's one of the few times I've gone back-to-back years. I find San Diego super exhausting. I mean, it's fun in the sense that I get to sort of see people that I don't normally get to see. It's sort of a nice social event, and there's nice promotional opportunities, and then you meet with Hollywood people and all that stuff. But, I mean, last year I walked that marina because that whole area is a huge setting for the book, and I got so sunburned because you're wearing a hat, but it doesn't matter because the water's reflecting off the ocean. Mm-hmm. And man, I just got sun-kissed. I was so like exhausted and just my feet were killing me and it just completely exhausted me. So it's a real marathon. Like I on the one hand, I sort of don't really get the folks who kind of camp out under the tents and the umbrellas and lean-tos and wait for Hall H or whatever it is that they're waiting for. But on the other hand, running around like a maniac isn't all that great either. So there were times I was walking past, you know, the kids in their inflatable beds, you know, lounging under towels and stuff. And I was like, that looks pretty good. You know, it's a real marathon. I mean, you really have to be committed to do it.
Fred, I'm about to nail you. Get ready to get nailed.
Okay, I'm ready. Nail me. That's weird out of context, but okay. Yes, go for it.
Yeah, that's all a person who's about to get nailed as bad as you are can say.
That's right. Bring it.
So in the world of the con artist, instead of the big two, there's the big three.
Right.
Because you've got – you mentioned Mr. Mystery. Mr. Mystery is published by – Atlas Comics,
right,
which exists along with Marvel Comics and DC Comics,
right,
and Image is also mentioned in the book at one point. So all of those exist in that world.
Is also a bunch of different publishers mentioned, but anyway, sorry, go on.
So here's the thing. Here, let me describe to our listeners some things about Atlas Comics. Okay, it is a company that had this Jack Kirby-like creator who had a bunch of lost art, and there's a lawsuit that aimed to get rights to the character back as well as the art, lost art back to them. They went bankrupt in the 90s. They were bought out by a toy company owned by a weird reclusive billionaire.
Israeli billionaire.
I could go on with some more things, but I guess my question to you is, what is Marvel Comics in the world of the con artist? Because do they just have a weirdly parallel histories?
I'm not familiar with that company. Did you say Marvel or Marvel? I wasn't.
Oh, I said. Oh, it's in the con artist. It's pronounced Marvel.
Well, you know.
It's crazy.
Yeah, there are perhaps some analogies going on there. You know, I mean, one of the fun things about the mystery genre, just because it's an investigation, is you get to peel back all these various layers of a subculture, a community, and everything. And, you know, the sort of the original sin, the original crime of the comics industry, the American comics industry, is that almost all of the you know, seminal creators, except for, you know, somebody like Chris Sims' personal hero, Bill Kane, were largely cheated out of reaping the benefits of their creations. And so I definitely want to talk about that and not shy away from that. And so, yeah, so that's sort of where the Ben Kay story comes from, is from that whole tradition. And if that appears to be similar to another creator and other creators' story, then so be it.
First of all, how dare you disrespect me on my own show?
Wait, you said Bill Kane. Did you mean Bill Finger or Bob Kane?
Oh wow, oh man, I lost. I got nerd demerits on that one. So you see, I wasn't That by saying Bill Kane, Chris, I was not dissing you.
You're just running circles around these lawyers.
That was a hidden. Yeah, exactly. They'll never catch me.
Well, along those same lines, I think for me, doing a project like this would almost inevitably lead to me wanting to put people I know in the book, or put right. like one of us, of the two of us, has in fact written a comic where the other one gets murdered, for instance. Right. Matt.
Hope you guys worked that out.
Wait, hold on. I get murdered in that comic.
That's true. That's true. I get caught by the police.
We're murdering Matt?
Yes.
There you go.
Spoiler warning for Copernicus Jones number 7.
Yeah, that's number 7.
Number 7. Very good comic. But I mean, did you have to go back and readjust? Like, oh, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to have Greg Pak be a murderer. I want to do right. something different.
You know, I mean, there's so much sort of, I get into so much sleazy stuff that's in the comic industry that is publicly known. Some of it became subsequently publicly known in between me turning in the book and the book coming out. I didn't really want to like necessarily drag a lot of my friends into it. Like, I think I name dropped a couple people that I know personally, like Walt Simonson. Yeah, I kind of tended to avoid. So a lot of the historical figures in the comic are name dropped, like Jack Kirby and Stan Lee. But for the most part, I tried to stick to fictional people. Like, there's a reference to one of the in San Diego. As anyone who's been to San Diego knows, there's all these like, you know, the TV shows, the Hollywood studios always have these crazy immersive like interactive sets or whatever you want to call them, environments. This year there was a giant Jack Ryan Amazon show took over a parking lot and did like a obstacle course to become a CIA agent last year. I think there was a whole the one thing everyone was talking about, unfortunately never got to go do it, was Blade Runner 2049 did like a VR thing. And so I had a whole gag in there about this fictional comic turned into a TV show called Absolute Zero. That's this post-apocalyptic nuclear winter thing. And so there's a whole ice bar thing in there. And Absolute Zero was a comic that Steve Ellis and I were trying to get off the ground for a long time back in the day. And so I name dropped Steve Ellis. So Steve got in there. Walt got in there. But for the most part, just because, like you said, Chris, I didn't want anybody to be like, you know, clearly Charles Soule did this, you know, or whatever. The blood's all over his hands. So, you know, I wanted to keep it, you know, I wanted to be like, you know, you didn't necessarily know who. I felt like if you included too many people, real people as suspects, people are like, Fred's never going to do that to that guy, you know. So I wanted to sort of keep it all. I wanted to keep people guessing and have everybody be a suspect. And that's sort of kind of, I think by the nature of the genre, limits you to doing fictional people.
Unless it's Warren Ellis, who I think has died in three different comic book appearances.
All right. There's some Warren Ellis references in there, I believe.
People are described as having met on his message board for sure.
Yes, that's right. Then that's a very common thing. Yeah. Millar World is another one. Jinx World, I guess, was Brian Bendis's. That was a whole thing in the aughts.
That does kind of come around to, is there anything specifically that happens in the book that is something drawn from your real life? Because I had the experience of thinking I found a dead body at San Diego.
Oh, wow. Who was it? Anyone I know?
No, it was, you know, the marina when you're walking along the backside of the convention center and then it kind of goes behind a couple hotels. I was walking and I saw one of the young woman who was there for like, I think she was like a competitive gamer. And she had her phone out and she looked terrified. And I was walking with a couple people because I think I was actually walking somebody back to their hotel. She was like, "Hey, excuse me, is that guy dead?" And she pointed over the side of the marina and there was a dude like face down on the rocks.
Okay.
Like he had kind of like he had fallen over it. And I was like, "You should probably call the cops, and I'll stay here and wait with you." And it turned out the guy was drunk and asleep and then got up and got mad that we were calling an ambulance for him. But for a minute there, I thought San Diego had taken a dramatic turn.
Well, in the book, pretty much everything that happens that's described, other than sort of the overtly noir elements that make up the mystery itself, pretty much happened either to me or my friends. Like, Mark Wade told me this. One of the first instances of the book is that Mike talks about having been brought to a quote-unquote con that turns out just hanging out in a guy's basement for a weekend.
Yep, that's a Mark Wade story.
Yeah. Or Mark Wade told it in a room I was in, not necessarily to me personally. But, most of the stuff that at one point Mike talks about all the crazy convention sketches he's been drawing, all that. I've talked to artists, and those are all literal things people ask them to draw.
Fred, is the idea of, and I don't think I'm giving anything away about the book when I say this. This is just something about the character of Mike. Is the idea of somebody essentially living at cons something you've heard about somebody doing before?
Yeah, I don't think he'll mind me saying this since he never received it. That's Mike McCone is who that's based on. He did that for several years.
Wow.
He lives in Portland now, I believe, but he told me about it first. We were both waiting for our luggage to come out at Newark Airport, and I was like, I'm going to write a novel about you. And he was like, ha, 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 very funny. And then like a year and a half later, we happened to be tabling next to each other, I think in Washington, D.C., and I was like, I'm pitching the novel about you. And he's like, okay, great. And then like on Facebook, I was like, I just sold the novel about you. And he's like, all right. And he's been very good-natured and a good sport about it. A lot of the details in there, like both Mikes have a storage facility. A lot of sort of the logistics of how Mike lives his life. Mike McCone, the real Mike, was very nice and talked to me a year after that at Denver Comic Con. Like, this is how crazy this con life is, right? I've seen this guy now at three different cons and I'm still getting the same story. Spread it over 2 years, 2.5 years, however long it is. But yeah, all the logistics of how Mike lives his life is largely what Mike, the real Mike, told me. And I put that into the fictional Mike's life.
That's wild.
Yeah, that's all 100% based on reality.
That is wild.
Now I want the companion, like, real life story of how Mike McCone lived at cons for however long.
Right, that's right. You'll have to corner him at a con. I'm sure you'll find him there at some point and find out. But, yeah, it's a little different. I mean, Mike McCone obviously is an English expat, so I think that lent a, you know, another wrinkle of complication into that lifestyle. So the fictional Mike is an American and doesn't have to deal with green cards and, you know, whatever else you need to do to stay in the country. But that obviously his ruthless life ends up, you know, being part of why the cops have him under suspicion for this murder in the first place.
Did you have any resistance from people who aren't in comics when you were like, no, 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 trust me, San Diego was a fascinating con to set a murder mystery at?
Not really. They were all really into it. I mean, you know, the Comic-Con culture has really exploded to the point where, you know, the joke is, and then, you know, we get into this somewhat in the book, is that, you know, it's called Comic-Con is almost a brand name, right? So much of it has nothing to do with comics at all. You know, it's all these, it's just random celebrities, you know, and t-shirts and Funkos and all this other stuff. But I think there was a real interest in sort of exploring this world in this context. Like, I literally just sold it on the pitch alone. You know, like, it wasn't even, like, hard.
No sample chapters needed.
Correct.
Yeah. So I want to talk about the structure of the book in a second because I find that really interesting. I think that's what you chose to do is maybe the only and best way to do – to write a book that takes place over the 5 days of Comic-Con. But before I do that, I have to ask if there was any point where, as a working comics writer, you got a little anxious about anything that was in the book, where it felt like maybe you were pulling the curtain back too far about the, I don't know, the sort of the politics within the world of comics, or like sort of some of the phoniness of the award stuff. Like, a lot of the award stuff is very funny.
Right.
And rings very true. But I just wonder if you ever got nervous about any of that.
I mean, you know, I am one of these assholes who thinks of himself as an artist. And so I kill that part of me that, or at least beat that part in of me into submission that thinks those things. And absolutely, I thought those things from time to time while doing the book. But ultimately, you know, look, all good art at least comes from truth. And so I was just going to tell the truth as I saw it and knew it. And, you know, I'd done that before in books like Comic History of Comics, dealing with the history, the actual nonfiction history of comics, and had definitely gotten some blowback from that. So I guess I was emboldened by the fact that I did get blowback from something like the Comic History of Comics, and I'm still here. So I don't know if that's hubris or a false sense of invulnerability, but you know, the people who work in comics outnumber vastly the people who are politically positioned to make decisions about who works and who doesn't. So ultimately, those folks, the gatekeepers, are going to go away, and us creative people are still going to be here because they can't make comics without us. And folks up levels who are, you know, assigning work and making those decisions, they're very temporary. Even if it seems sometimes like they're there forever. So I'm confident that no matter what blowback I get, it won't outweigh doing something that's phony or something that's fake or something that I don't think is true to experiences lived by people who work in comics. And, you know, bottom line is that you're talking about work. Like, these are people with jobs, and these are people who bust their asses and work ridiculous hours for questionable pay. And so I really wanted to be true to that. And that's sort of who I'm more loyal to than anyone politically above me who, you know, may be able to make my life more difficult. But of course, the book's only been out for a month, you know, and then we did this interview in a year, and I'm living out of the dumpster. Maybe I'll have a different opinion.
Yeah. But you're right, contacted now, by an eccentric reclusive billionaire.
That's right, exactly. Yeah. Once they find me floating in the Gowanus Canal, then you'll be like, Fred's strangely unresponsive now.
I did actually just get – it just came in on my email. You know that scene in John Wick 2 where John Wick is now in play? It's that, but it's you, Fred.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's Ian McShane has called out the hit.
He breaks the rules of the Continental.
Exactly.
The most I can give you is 15 minutes to answer Twitter questions. But before we do that,
all right, I guess I'll do it.
This is your second novel, as we mentioned. You got 10 Dead Comedians. You have The Con Artist. Both great titles, by the way. What's next for you in comics? Are you done? Are you throwing the match on the bridge as we speak?
I burned all the bridges. I'm doing a lot more prose work and doing a lot of stuff. I'm doing a lot of comics, but I'm not doing any comics sort of for the mainstream industry. So Ryan Dunleavy and I are doing Action Presidents right now for HarperCollins, which is a middle grade book about the presidents, shockingly enough. I'm doing a web comic for Webtoons, Line Webtoon, which we're super excited about. I'm doing a book for Random House right now about the history of basketball, which I'm ultra, ultra excited about, being a big fan, and just sort of, as you guys know, I love doing the history comics, the nonfiction stuff, and so that's super exciting. And I'm doing a lot of novel work, a lot of prose stuff. So as the summer is now ending, I'm going to start transitioning more to comics and sort of do more creator-owned stuff, just because if you don't show your face in the comics industry, they tend to forget who you are. So I'm going to definitely try to get back in the game. But at the moment, I'm doing a lot of comics. It's just all outside the direct market at the moment.
I guess Greg and I
do Weapon X for Marvel, which is super fun. But yeah. And fairly soon. But that's sort of my one mainstream thing. I'm talking to some other people, but for the most part, it's all been non-traditional comics.
Fred, one quick thing before we get to Twitter questions, and I just wanted to ask about this as another author of books, because it's It seems like it's not a huge deal, but it feels like a big deal at the same time, where I just want to know, from the beginning, did you have the idea that this book was just going to throw out chapters, basically? Like, throw chapters out the window and instead just be divided into parts where it was each day of Comic-Con?
Yes. Yeah, that was always the idea. What changed, what was kind of funny, was that I wrote about half – I was about halfway through the book, and I was writing it in the third person. And always in the back of my mind, you know, sometimes we call it a geek noir just because it's set in Southern California, and there's femme fatales, and there's government corruption, and there's a lot of, like, you know, noir aspects. And for some reason, it took me a long time to sort of go, oh, this should really be in the first person. So I rewrote the whole book to remove the third person, put everything from Mike's point of view, and have it be in the first person. And that adjusted – that required some adjustment, but not much. Right before the book went to press, I found one stray Mike – as like the third person noun, the subject of the sentence I had to change to I. And so I was like, whew! Hopefully I caught all the rest of them. But yeah, that was the big, the time structure is always the same. The point of view shifted slightly.
I have some other questions, Fred, but we'll have to talk another time. With that, I think we're going to kick it over to our listeners for Twitter questions. Matt, if people want to get in on these conversations that we have each and every week here on War Rocket Ajax, how exactly can they go about that?
Well, all you have to do is answer some simple questions. You know, I don't know why you're not cooperating. You know, all I have is a few questions. I just want to know where you are on Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 6:30 Pacific. If you could tell me that, you're free to go. I just need that simple answer. Because, listen, I'll level with you, okay? That's the time when I, at the Matt D. Wilson, or Chris at the ISB, one of us puts out the call for questions on Twitter for our guest. And it's when you would have the opportunity to ask questions of our guest on Twitter. And so, if you could just tell me your whereabouts at those times, then you can ask a question and then you'll be free. And I won't have to keep you in this interrogation room anymore.
Fair.
Here are some of the questions from our listeners. Here's one from Barely Sushi on Twitter, who has a question of local interest. They want to know, any particular reason why you chose the comedy club here in Rochester to use in 10 Dead Comedians?
Wow, that's super specific. So that is in the opening bit of 10 Dead Comedians, where we're introducing all the characters, and one of them, Dante Dupree, is this sort of tireless road comic who goes everywhere. I believe I chose Rochester because it's right over the border from Canada, and the gag in that bit is that Dante wakes up after a bender and realizes he's not in America anymore, and he doesn't remember how he got to Canada. So that is the primary reason I chose Rochester, I believe. That's an excellent question. It's a very specific question. Thank you.
Here's one from at Coltreg on Twitter, Luke Hare, who has a bit of a goof to ask you, Fred. Okay. With the election coming up, are you pro diggity or no diggity?
The election coming up, my pro diggity or no diggity?
That's right.
Is there, guys, is there an aspect of this question I'm not getting? Is that a reference that either of you are picking up on, or is that just sort of, is that like a Dadaist nonsense?
It's a reference to the song No Diggity by Blackstreet, but that's it. Okay. I mean, it's just a goof.
Got it. I am pro diggity. I'm taking a stand. Pro diggity.
Ooh. Ooh.
No, that was the wrong answer.
Mm. Here's one from Ungage. I think that's how you say his Twitter name. I've never asked him, but it's Tim Stevens on Twitter. It's spelled UNGAJJE.
Sounds right.
He asks, you had a gift for taking smaller but very cool characters at Marvel and putting a unique spin on them. Taskmaster in particular stands out. Any other similar small cool character, not just at Marvel, any company, who you haven't gotten a shot at yet but would love to tackle?
That's interesting. I'm developing something right now with another company that I guess I can't talk about because it hasn't been announced yet. But so I'm definitely doing something like that for another company. I always liked, you know, Tom and Mitch's Mr. Miracle series is great, and it's a super fun title. I always wanted to do a bit in the old Kirby comics. They had young Scott Free strips that sort of talked about his time at Granny Goodness's orphanage. I always wanted to do a series that was just that. That was just like a torture Harry Potter. You know, that was just like a young Scott Free, like YA murder private school series. I thought that would be fun.
Here's a question from at Chris's Pod on Twitter, the Chris's on Infinite Earths podcast, which has a wonderful title.
I love it.
They ask, so we have a comic history of comics, which is great. What else should there be a comics history of?
Well, I will plug me and Ryan's Action Presidents, which is available right now at bookstores around the world from HarperCollins. Washington and Lincoln are out right now, and Teddy Roosevelt and JFK will be coming along soon enough. You might want to pick up Action Philosophers, which is our first book that predates comic history comics. That's the lives and thoughts of history's A-list brain trust, told in a hip and humorous comic fashion. And there are no others that there should be a comic history of. That's it.
You're really painting yourself into a corner, three. Fred.
Those three series. What's that?
You're really painting yourself into a corner there. Of,
I guess, right? There are no other histories, just those three. Comics, philosophy, and presidents.
I feel like...
Ryan and I are talking about doing a new thing, but it's going to be a little bit different. It's not strictly history necessarily, but there's a lot of history in it.
I feel like Action Philosophers was so long ago that at this point you could do a comic book history of Fred Vidlenti and Ryan Dunleavy.
That's right. It would just be he and I yelling at each other. Ryan is the slowest eater. We've had so many meals. Slowest eater in the world. It would be a 20-page comic of him finishing a burger and fries. That's what our comic would be.
You'd be like growing a beard and,
that's right,
and inventing new technology while he was continuing to eat the burger.
Dying, having just being a skeleton with cobwebs attached to it.
Here's a question from Tales to Enrage on Twitter, who has a con question for us. Fred, what's the weirdest cosplay that you've seen at a con that you could still identify?
Yeah, I guess I'll take this literally. So at Denver last year, I saw a guy, and I just didn't get what he was going for. He was Yondu from Guardians of the Galaxy, but dressed in like 50s like swimwear. And carrying a boogie board, so he was like a 50s lifeguard Yondu. And I was just staring at him going, what? Is this like a thing that I'm not – is this like a Yogi Diggity thing that I don't understand? Like it just completely went over my head. I was like, I don't get it.
Okay. Fred, did you not see the post credit sequence?
Oh no, I didn't. You know, was there a beach boogie Guardians of the Galaxy scene that I missed?
If you stayed in the theater for 45 minutes after the end of Guardians of the Galaxy 2, you get a scene where Yondu's like, I'm gonna go back in time and invent boogie boarding.
Surf's up.
That's it. You got it.
Okay. I take it back then. I've never seen a weird cosplay at the con.
Right, I think
my answer.
There's a lot of like mashup characters that are almost like a puzzle, where you have to like figure out which two characters are getting put together. I do have to say that maybe like 2 years ago at Heroes Con, there was a group of people dressed as the entire cast of characters from the movie Death Becomes Her, which was the most like it was cool.
It was also incredible. Like, I remember that one.
It was also like, why?
That's Meryl Streep and right?
Bruce Willis.
And Bruce Willis and Rosie O'Donnell, who was the other person? I don't remember.
I don't remember who else was in it, but I do remember they were all the characters from that movie.
That's bananas.
Here's a question from at Xavier Files on Twitter. They ask, was Omega Red's Baby Tiger your idea?
Yes.
Asked and answered.
That's very straightforward. I texted Greg. I was like, I'm going to give Omega Red a Baby Tiger. And he was like, okay. This is how our decision-making process works, people. It's very straightforward.
Here's a question from somebody we may be familiar with, at Tom Fowlerbug on Twitter.
Vaguely familiar.
Tom asks, how awesome is Tom Fowler on the book The Con Artist? Would you say he totally elevated the text? That I owe all that I have to him?
Yes, and I feel like that the book was a steaming pile of garbage until Tom's beautiful pencil work was added. And maybe one day he'll actually read the book so he can see the prose that he elevated.
Here's a question from Greg Silber on Twitter, at Greg Silber, Gregory Paul Silber. He asks, I love action philosophers. If you could write an ongoing series about one philosopher, who would it be?
Well, that's a great question. I'll give kind of a sappy answer, which is that, you know, I'm somebody who's dealt with anxiety his whole life, and I think a lot of people are like me. And I found working with Zen Buddhism and thinking about the tenets of Zen Buddhism really have helped me sort of process my life and deal with, you know, emotional difficulty. So I would probably do sort of a Zen Buddhist Bodhidharma type thing that would sort of bring in practical philosophy as a way of managing day-to-day life for the average person. I think that's something that would be very useful. And now I'm guilty having said that out loud that I haven't done that yet.
Kind of a serious question. Like, legit serious question, Fred. Did you ever get into the Lojong?
The what?
The Lojong?
No.
That's the Buddhism practice that my therapist has recommended to me.
Oh, excellent. Anxiety. Okay, cool. So, how would you characterize it?
It's a lot of I think the core thing is that you take in anxiety and kind of suffering and whatever is bothering you. You take it in on the breath, and then you send as you breathe out, like, not a solution to that problem, but kind of acceptance of that problem. I have a very hard time with it.
Yeah, that sounds challenging. That definitely sounds like an easier said than done situation. But all these things are a process, and, you know, they're you know, just because it's simple doesn't mean it's easy, right? That sounds like good advice to me.
We're going to wrap up here with a couple questions from Character Corner, the part of the listener question segment, the Twitter question segment, where we ask some questions from fictional characters who live on Twitter. This one is from JJJ Bugle News on Twitter, J. Jonah Jameson.
Heard of him.
He asks, my perfect spider daughter, Maddie, took me to a...
What?
Took me to a comics con. It says Comics Con, and several individuals dressed as foxes accosted me with hair dryers. In that spirit, what is your worst con experience?
What is my worst con experience? I mean, sometimes you do get dumped at these cons that are underpromoted, and you're just kind of in a corner, and you feel like you've been exiled on an ice floe or something. You're just kind of out in the middle of nowhere. Like, I don't want to call anybody out by name, but those are sort of the least fun, where you're just at a con where the comics at more and more you run into these smaller cons. I've frankly kind of stopped going to them for this very reason, where the comics aspect of it is kind of an afterthought. And so those are the kind of things I kind of avoid. I'm kind of sticking more to the bigger cons where there's more of an audience for comics and reading in general, and not just, you know, getting photos and autographs and stuff, you know?
Yeah. Like, there's lots of colorful stuff to complain about, but honestly, the worst thing that can happen at a con is nothing.
Yeah, exactly. It's boredom. Like, that's the worst. That's the worst part of it.
Actually, the worst thing that can happen at a con is you're bored and then a 6 foot tall blue fox accosts you with a hairdryer.
That's right. That's right. Or, like, you're bored, and this happened to me recently. You find out your hotel room hasn't been paid for. You're like, oh, that's great. Let's make some phone calls, you know. So, you know, boredom and then financial stress are always an exciting combo.
Here's a question from Stone Cold HCC, an account that exists only to ask questions on War Rocket Ajax.
God bless them.
Fred, Stone Cold HC say he wants to know, you any good at mazes?
With a pencil or in person?
I have no further information to give you.
I'm pretty good at both, actually. I'm pretty good at both. There's a really nice – there's a good like one of those like carnival plastic mazes in Governor's Island here in New York. I was pretty good at that one. I don't get out pretty quick. I like memes. I'm more of a crosswords person, though. I really love me some New York Times crossword puzzles.
Well, that seems like a great note to end Twitter questions on. Fred Van Lente.
I have one last question for Fred Van Lente, actually.
From at the ISB?
From at the ISB, who's here right now. On the show.
With his mouth hole.
Fred, you've talked about doing... In The Con Artist, you've got your character who is living at cons, you know, doing the con circuit. And that's a life that I think we've all led. Would you consider either doing a sequel or when the inevitable movie comes out, maybe focusing it on Thomas Ian Nicholas, a.k.a. Rookie of the Year, and his schedule of doing literally every Wizard World?
Wow. That's hardcore. Jeez, I don't know. That would this be a comedy or a tragedy in your mind?
I feel like they're very close together.
We'll see. Our people will talk. We'll work it out.
He's a road warrior, Fred.
Is he tireless on the Wizard Worlds?
He's at every single one, from what we can tell.
That's hardcore, man. Him and Cato Kalin, they're just hitting the road.
Fred Van Lente, the book is The Con Artist. It is available right now for everyone to dive into, and you absolutely should. But where else can they find you online, should you wish to be found?
If you can spell my name, I'm on Facebook, and I'm fredvanlente.com, and that's me on Twitter, and I'm everywhere!
All right, Fred, thank you so much for joining us, man. It's always a pleasure to have you.
It's always a pleasure to be here. Thanks, guys.
Thanks once again to Fred Van Lente for joining us for this episode. But I think it is time for us to answer a question, to step into the hot seat ourselves.
Indeed.
Which, in August in North Carolina, every seat's a hot seat. Am I right, Matt?
Oh, boy. It's not the heat. It's the humidity.
What's our listener question this week, Matt?
This question is from Spuds Fan on Tumblr, who asks a casting question for us. If not okay. Stegron, which Spider-Man villain should Terry Crews play?
That is an excellent question.
Terry Crews, a lauded and wonderful actor who you can currently see on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. You might know him from the movie Idiocracy. He played President Macho Camacho.
Mm-hmm. You may also remember him from Battle Dome.
He was T-Money on Battle Dome.
He was T-Money on Battle Dome and the associated Battle Dome crossover appearances with World Championship Wrestling circa 2000.
I've actually recently been watching the re-edited season 4 of Arrested Development on Netflix here and there. Mm-hmm. I forgot that he was in that playing a politician. But he is in that. Terry Crews, absolutely wonderfully delightful in everything that he does.
Does J. Jonah Jameson count as a villain?
He is sometimes a villain.
Imagine Terry Crews yelling at you from inside a spider's lair.
Here's the problem with Terry Crews playing J. Jonah Jameson.
Uh-huh.
He's too lovable.
Matt, he's a professional actor. He has range.
Sure. I don't want to limit Terry Crews, but I feel like there is an innate lovability to that man. That means he would have to play a bad guy with a heart of gold.
Okay. So who are the bad guys we like?
I have an idea of who he could play, even though the character who's already appeared in a film.
Okay.
Sandman.
Okay, interesting. Interesting.
Because here's the thing about Sandman.
He's made of Sandman.
He's made of Sandman. He's always, like, kind of suspiciously jacked.
Well, if you could shape yourself out of sand, Matt.
You just have them big, broad shoulders.
Yeah, you'd give yourself some pythons.
But the other thing about Sandman is, like, there are sympathetic versions of Sandman.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, they tried to do it in Spider-Man 3, where he was, you know, only committing crimes for his daughter. His dying daughter.
Yep.
So, to me, I feel like that would be a good use of Terry Crews, where he could be the villain who does bad things, but you kind of get it because he's got good reasons.
I can't believe that you don't think Terry Crews can play America's favorite newspaper man whose son is a hero astronaut. By the way, Maddie got me. Maddie Franklin got me harder than I think anything's got me on this podcast in a while. But you think he could play someone who routinely tries to crush Spider-Man and suffocate him with sand?
I feel like sometimes you gotta hate Jonah. And it is very hard for me to hate Terry Crews. That is a personal failing of me, I guess. That I love that man too much.
I'm not saying I'm right about J. Jonah Jameson. I think there's a lot to consider. I think you are correct about that. But I do think Sandman does frequently try to murder Spider-Man.
That's true. But and even when he's trying to murder Spider-Man, you're like, he's just doing it for his daughter.
It's that, speaking of Arrested Development, it's that,
I just want my son back.
I just want my daughter.
Yeah.
I just want my daughter back. Okay, not Stegron, which is unfortunate, because that is the go-to answer. That's the correct answer.
I believe that is an answer we posited at one time.
Yeah. But, like, you don't want him to be Mysterio, right? Because, first of all, you do not want Mysterio to look like he could snap Tom Holland in half.
Yeah, Mysterio does not need to be, like, Mr. Muscles. Also, Mysterio has to be, again, Mysterio should be somebody you kind of hate.
Okay, this is really playing against type.
Okay.
But you know who Terry Crews would fucking rule as.
Hit me.
Sergey.
Kravenoff?
Yeah, man. I'll talk about the Hunter.
That might be fun.
Imagine that dude in the straight-up comic book outfit. But, like, playing him like Kraven in Squirrel Girl, where he's very likable.
Yeah. I also think, even though they've already done movie Rhino, Terry Crews could be a fun Rhino.
I feel like Terry Crews comes off as way too smart to be Rhino.
He could play dumb, though. He could play dumb way better than he could play hateable.
Yeah, but I mean, like, Rhino's really dumb.
I'll tell you, if Terry Crews were to be cast for real as a Spider-Man villain, I am reasonably certain that I know who it would be.
Okay.
Tombstone.
Interesting. Interesting. I can see that. I still think Kraven is the way to go.
It would be fun for him to play Kraven.
It would be, because who else? Spider-Man does not have any other villain who has that body.
Like, I mean, that's true.
Terry Crews would look amazing in the classic Kraven leopard print capri pants outfit.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. Now, do we know if Terry Crews is bald by choice? Or, I mean, you could always put a hairpiece on him, certainly.
To be Tombstone or Kraven?
I guess either one. I think they could let him be bald for Tombstone.
I think they could probably let him be bald for Kraven.
Kraven needs that head of hair, man.
As long as, okay. He's got that cool, goatee, though, Terry Crews.
He does. Look, we're saying he's a versatile actor who could play a lot of roles.
Listeners, please vote hashtag Terry Crews Craven or hashtag Terry Crews Tombstone. Don't hashtag Terry Crews Tombstone. People will get the wrong idea.
Yeah, don't do that. Please don't do that.
Just do Terry Crews Craven.
All right. That's
Terry
gonna do
for Craven. Hashtag Terry for Craven.
Thank you, Spuds fan, for sending in that question. If you would like to send us a question on Tumblr, you can do that by heading over to warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com and hitting that ask box. You can also send us listener questions at our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That is likewise where you can send every story ever lists, panel president lists. If you want to sponsor the show, you can let us know there. Or if you want to drop us a line about something else, it's all there at that email address. Our website is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. It's also where you can see the Every Story Ever and Panel President lists as they continue to grow.
Still, literally, the only comments I ever read.
Also, head over to Apple Podcasts or whatever podcasting app you use to listen to this show and leave us a review there. The more positive reviews we get on those apps, the more we are featured on those apps, which helps us out. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us online. For me, you can go to mattdwilson.net to find links to my comics, my books, my other podcasts, and all my social media presences. They are all right there at mattdwilson.net. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
People can find all of my stuff by going to the-isb.com. That has links to all the other podcasts that I do, as well as comic books that I write, and columns that I write here and there around the web, including some extended thoughts about Man of Steel and Brian Bendis' first issue of Superman that you can find over at Polygon. You can also find me in the previews catalog right now with the Army of Darkness Halloween special that's coming out in October that Chad and I are writing, as well as Infinity Wars Sleepwalker, which is going to be super weird and super fun. So definitely check those out. And it does help to pre-order. If you have a local comic book store, then tell them that you want it. You don't need to give them a diamond order code or something. Just be like, hey, I'd like to get a copy of Infinity War Sleepwalker. Or, ideally, 20,000 copies of Infinity War Sleepwalker, please. They might need your credit card number for that one. Matt, we've done it again.
We done it again.
I got some good news for you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. According to WellBillSoda.com, they will be at the Mountain State Fair.
I actually checked on that myself today to see if I could get any use out of that cup that I paid $20 for.
Yeah. I want to just sit there and just drink it while making eye contact and let them know that I am now out to make a profit on this.
Well, Sick and Sleepy have put in another show for you, the good listeners of War Rocket Ajax. Was it HQC? That answer's in the wind.
Matt, I was hoping that you could maybe check the old teletype and see how I've been for the past 36 years.
Oh, okay, let me see. It's loud.
Real loud. But it did pause to let you say that, which was nice.
It's very polite. Okay, Chris Sims.
Can I say, Matt, before you read it,
yep.
A-plus fully work this
Thank
week.
Thank you. Thank you so much. All right, this says Chris Sims, born August 12th, status, oh brother, HQC.
Yes. Yes. That makes me so happy. Matt, we've S-ranked it again. Have a great week, everybody.
We love you.
Yeah! It's for every one of us. It's not for every one of us. It's time for the body, and every man, every woman, every child, everybody flash. We are everything to Flash. Hey, Flash!
stay on.